Consequence Podcast Network.
What Witch, This, That, or the Other? From Bonnaroo to Coachella, traversing the music festival landscape can be tricky. That's where we come in with high fives for everyone. The What Podcast with Brad Barry, Lord Taco, dedicated to exploring the entire festival scene.
Brad has worked in the radio industry for more than 20 years and currently lives in Brooklyn, where he is program director for three stations, including one in New York, one in Detroit, and one in Miami.
Barry's been a reporter for the Chattanooga Times Free Press, covering all aspects of the entertainment industry since 1987. That's before you were born.
Lord Taco, the smart guy who makes these podcasts on our website at thewhatpodcast.com work, also really good at identifying babies, loves blue-haired moms, PBR, and his beautiful Volkswagen bus.
We all fell in love with the Bonnaroo Festival years ago, not only because of the amazing bands that play there every year, but also because of the incredible community spirit that has developed around it. Radiate positivity.
And we really like talking about the inside baseball stuff when it comes to putting on a huge music festival, so join us.
You can hear the What Podcast on the Consequence Podcast Network or anywhere you find your favorite podcasts.
High five.
You're really good at this.
Yeah, I have no idea what's happening.
It is Bonnaroo Week on the What Podcast, Barry Corder. How excited are you, baby?
This is the best.
You ready? You good?
Well, I'm never ready till okay. I'm there.
Have you pulled everything out?
Yep, did that this weekend.
Is everything clean? Is everything ready to go?
Clean, no critters. Okay. No critters that I can tell. No okay. holes in tents. Yeah, uh-huh. Everything's there.
You're not bringing an extra guest or two?
Not that I know of. Just okay. you.
Nothing's crawling into the back of the car. Now, have you already thought about how everything's going to pack into the car, into the truck? Have you already eyeballed it and yep. come up yep. with the whole... Okay. All
right. Done it enough times now. I met with Brian Stone and Taco on Sunday to okay. talk about the handoffs and
okay.
got the easy up tent to Taco.
Uh-huh.
He's probably already there trying to figure out how he's yes, getting he in early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's waking up in a Walmart parking lot right now. It's a big week. I am starting to see all of the videos and pictures roll in from the people driving down. You forget how, until the week of, at least I do, you forget how much of a mammoth thing this is for a lot of people that, you know, Evan Bonnaroo had to start leaving on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know?
Well you're doing it. You're doing a little bit of that.
He's leaving. He's at a brewery right now. Just, you know, because it took him 3 days to get down there.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. That's I'm having a hard time like wrapping my head around it, not being 45 minutes away.
It makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
Yeah. And the one thing that's happening if you're not doing the Bonnaroo, and it's even happening in D.C. this week and then New York this weekend, is the Reset Festival. Barry, this has sort of been going on around the entire country. It's this rolling festival with Steve Lacy, Boy Genius, Claro, and LCD Sound System. And if you're not in Bonnaroo mode and you didn't do GovBall last weekend, Reset Festival this weekend, still with tickets, LCD Sound System on Friday. And then on Sunday, they've got tickets as well for Steve Lacy. But this thing is exploding everywhere in the country. And to me, it's like this really fun new way of thinking about a festival-ish kind of thing. But it comes to you. And it's just yeah. this rolling operation that just comes through the entire, you know, East Coast of the country.
Makes sense, doesn't it? We've talked about the evolution, you know. Bonnaroo 2002 kind of reintroduces Lollapalooza before that, Coachella around it. But that's a long way to go for some people to travel to. And then the boutique festivals sort of popped out of the huge ones. You know, how about putting a smaller one in a, you know, a neighborhood near you kind of thing?
And, yeah,
and
I mean,
this is the next, sounds like the next idea.
It's such a brilliant idea. 12 cities going from as small as Columbus to New York, San Diego, L.A. I find it to be such a bizarrely crazy idea. I'd love to, after it's all said and done, find somebody that's part of it and ask them just the logistics of how all of this sort of like rearranged and moved. Because in New York, LCD will be on Friday. But in DC, LCD is Sunday.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It's just a never, it's like squeezing a water balloon with this festival.
We do. You need to line us up with some folks who are planning this, because everything else that we've talked about still applies. You still got to get permits and security and bathrooms and all of that.
Just now you just got to do it in 12 different places.
Now you got to do it 12 times.
But 12 different promoters too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's fascinating, but what a great idea.
It is a great. And then the other thing too that I kind of want to ask is, you know, when you do one of these, it's around the country. You obviously have to plan that some of them are not going to do as well in certain parts of the country, right? You know, a lot of these festivals are regional sort of things, especially the boutique ones. I wonder like how they program these to the entire country and not just to certain regions of the map. Anyway, yeah. I hope they do it again. I really do hope they do it again, because it was a fascinating idea.
Yeah, it is. I like it. It's a lot of moving parts. Like, do you book an LCD because they're on tour in that area? You're not going to ask somebody to travel across the country for one show, so you book what's local or regional. Yeah, it's a lot of things to consider.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to pop in this week with a short little high five. And I don't know, of the guests that we've had this year in Bonnaroo season, of course, there's the Jim James that you can go back and listen to, which, you know, we can wax poetic after, you know, the festival's over. But the other one that we loved the most was the Noah Kahn chat. And it's particularly interesting to me. Oh, buddy, okay? You all right?
I was like, stepped on a banana peel.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. So the Noah conversation was interesting to me because I went to the show at Radio City Music Hall last week, and oh my God, this Bonnaroo show is going to be massive, absolutely massive. And the only thing I'd say to anybody that's walking into the Noah show blindly, or at least listen to all of his stuff and have never seen him live, the thing that's going to be tough is everyone there knows every word, and they're screaming it to the top of their lungs. It is really hard to get into the show because everyone's already like 10 steps past you with their fandom of Noah Kahn. And there were moments of it I was like, man, I just wish I was listening to him.
Yeah.
You know, a few years ago, that Frank Ocean show at Bonnaroo was so difficult because you couldn't hear a word he was saying. Noah's not as, you know, as low energy as Frank Ocean, but still, when, you know, 20,000 people are screaming at the top of their lungs every lyric.
Yeah.
Oof. Okay. Already enough.
Avett Brothers got that way.
Yeah, they did. That's right.
Seeing them here, and it was like, I didn't come to hear the six people around me scream in my ear. I came to hear them, but that's what it's become. So
yeah, that Bonnaroo show is going to be massive. But it's a great show. The new album's fantastic. Or the new song is fantastic. And you know, if you ever want to know a little trick, the Noah album is being re-released with a couple of new songs. There's only one reason they re-release an album like this. Is because they need it inside Grammy consideration. They need to squeeze in some new material so that he can get nominated for Best New Artist. Yeah,
works for me. That was a great interview. I enjoyed it. And you're right. Jim James, obviously. And by the way, I got the Return to Thunderdome vinyl.
Oh, how is it?
Oh, it's so good.
Is it?
So good. The quality is so good. And even our friend Parker reached out. I was listening to it, and I think he's hype now.
Oh, really?
My Morning Jacket show, yeah.
Wow. Because this is not one that he even, like, understood.
I think he and Jake had said it might be a walk-by for them just because we've hyped it up so much. But now I think they're reconsidering a little bit. So
I think it's good. Yeah, I think those guys wanted to, you know, beat each other up at Korn. Isn't that right? For some reason they needed to, like, yeah. I don't know. It's so funny that some people need to go to Bonnaroo to fist fight in a pit for some odd reason.
And call it fun.
Yeah. The My Worn Jacket show is a for sure must. I can't believe that anybody would ever call it a walk-by, but okay.
I know. But you hear it in this record. I mean, you.
Oh, really?
I think you get what we've been talking about for so long, or I've been talking about anyway. It's perfect Bonnaroo. It's perfect. So
yeah. Well, good. We'll go back and check that out on the YouTube or the podcast of your choice, podcast, whatever it's called, of your choice.
Platform
of your choice. That's right. And then we'll give you a little Noah Kahn before we see you on the farm this weekend. Barry Corder, Brad Steiner. It's another High Five clip on the What Podcast.
See you there.
Oh, look at there. Noah, hey. How are you, stranger?
Good. How are you?
Doing amazing. How are things?
Great. They're great.
I wonder what it's like being the biggest music star on the planet right now. I wonder what that's like.
You have to ask Taylor Swift.
Man, I can't tell you how much I love this album. I love Stick Season. God almighty, it has been stuck in my head for weeks. I ride the entire train to and from the city. I play it on repeat. I don't know. I know exactly the last song that I got this obsessed with. It was Chaise Longue by Wet Leg. Man, congratulations. What an incredible last 8-12 months this has been.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. It's been a total trip, and I'm still happy playing the songs live, which is a testament that I think I actually might like the album a little bit. So thank you guys for listening to it, and I appreciate that you guys like it as well.
I wonder, you're a very smart guy. Being this part of the zeitgeist, does it feel weird?
I don't know. I don't know. It feels cool to like have a lot of people listening to the music and extrapolating their own details from it and like putting it into their own lives, and then seeing people kind of form a community around the music is what it's all about. I've been doing this for 6 years, and you know, even when I was playing shows for like 300 people, like less than that, I still saw like this amazing sense of community in the audience and among the fans. And I still see that same community as the fan base grows. And I think that's so cool. Like being able to feel like you're creating something that's creating positivity and letting people, you know, vent their feelings to each other and creating conversations around mental health and therapy. Like that's so cool. So if I can be part, I don't know what part of the zeitgeist I'm in, but if I'm doing anything and people are hearing the music and taking away their own, you know, their own challenges themselves and finding ways to deal with it, then I'm happy.
Well, you mentioned music is therapy. The way that you write is so, I don't know, you're so introspective. It feels like it's coming straight from your life. How much of it is therapy for you to put some of this out?
Yeah, I mean, every song has parts of me in it. And every song is helpful for me to kind of figure out what I'm feeling. Sometimes I'll write things down and I don't even know how I'm feeling it. And then I read the words, I'm like, Jesus Christ, I'm depressed right now. Or, you know, like I am sad and this is sad. And it's cool to be able to kind of figure yourself out through songwriting. So it's always been a way for me to process my emotions. I also go to therapy every week, which is really helpful and allows me to kind of have some clarity and lets me look at what I want to write about next within myself. And I think what's mostly therapy for me is seeing other people feel better about it and feel like I'm making a positive impact on people's lives, which is just so cool and should be the goal of any artist. And that's been what's been the most healing for me, is seeing people find happiness through the music.
I was just saying that we have talked to people before who've said, I wrote a song, you know, whatever, that I never maybe intended to be public. It was just for me. And then it went public and they were shocked and surprised that it resonated with anybody else. Was there a point in your life where, you know, I'm guessing you might've been similar. I mean, I don't think anybody sits down and says, I'm going to write this song because it's going to resonate with, you know, 1 million people or 100 million. But at some point you have to make that transition where, you know, you wrote it just for you, but now you realize it hits with other people. Was there a point for you with that? Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. I think it started like the first times that I started writing songs about anxiety and depression was just because I was feeling such an overwhelming sense of these things in my life. And then I started putting songs out because, to be honest, I had writer's block and they were the only songs that I had written. I was like, you know what? These songs need, I don't have a lot of other songs. These are the ones that are about sadness and the things I'm going through. And the response was so cool and so supportive from everybody, you know, down to the label, down to my family, but definitely to the fans as well, that it inspired me to keep doing it. And I always say, like, when I was younger and I felt like there was no one else in the world had understood what I was feeling. And I heard a Paul Simon lyric or a Cat Stevens lyric. And for 1 minute, I felt like someone had figured me out and that someone knew what I was going through. And I felt like I wasn't alone. And so when I sit down to write, I do try to be as vulnerable as possible. And I never think like, oh, this song is going to come out. But I think, man, if I could provide that little lifeline for some kid somewhere that I got when I was in seventh grade, that I'm doing something important and that vulnerability is worth it. But you know, I don't make music. I make music for me, but I really do also make it for the fans. I think I'm not writing songs to cater to the fans, but they seem to like when I talk about myself and I try to do that for them.
Consequence Podcast Network.